This is a dispatch from the Institute of Magical Historicity. These dispatches come in from across our worldwide network in New York, Zurich, Rochester, Prague, and San Francisco. They are written and read by Institute President Benjamin Wax and scored by the Dean of Aesthetics, Ariel Cruz. They have been peer-reviewed for accuracy by the Council of Three and fact-checked by Institute staff. For more information, visit magicalhistoricity.com. Forbidden Fruits. In a small village in Switzerland, just underneath a mountain, there is a quiet restaurant where the villagers never eat. Visitors from big cities will come, will fly first class to Zurich and rent a car and a chauffeur to take them to the village and have a quiet meal pretending to be just like everyone else. If they recognize anyone in the restaurant, they will not say so, and when they return, they will never tell anyone where they have been. But the parents who live next door and around the block and down the road will warn their children, "Whatever you do, you must never let a morsel of this food pass your lips." The restaurant is owned by an Italian family who fled Mussolini in the 1930s and made their way to Switzerland. The patriarch was a mathematician, and for a time he worked in cafes and taught part-time at a university. But he never felt safe in the city, which was filled with prying eyes and saboteurs, which was impossible to feel rooted in the way he had in his ancestral home, where his family had lived for at least 1,000 years. And so, when he had saved enough money, he had moved to another place where families had lived 1,000 years, and he pretended that their roots were his. The villagers had accepted him because, realizing that they had no use for a mathematician, he had quickly made himself useful as a handyman and a carpenter. He went out of his way to build a house that looked just like theirs. He raised his children to be just like theirs. He had been too successful, and so did not understand what had happened to his youngest daughter. But the villagers did. They knew. They saw it quickly, and it was only out of respect for her hard-working father that they did not run her out of the village when she began to cook. And it was only out of fear for their lives that they did not burn her restaurant to the ground after she opened it. For by then, it was clear what she had done, and they regretted not turning her childhood home to ashes when it would have been easy. But kindness often comes with a terrible cost. For the food she cooked was fairy food, made from ingredients brought to her by the pixies of the forest and the gnomes of the mountains. Some said that they brought her these things and taught her to cook them because for all her father's efforts to raise her to be kind and reserved like they were, she was wild and emotional in the way of her grandparents, possessing a temperament that the villagers had never had and that the fairy folk found novel and charming. Some said that her pure foreign blood, tasting of ancient Italy, was itself a magical ingredient, and she traded it with the local fairies, who served it at their own holiday banquets. Some said that when she turned 11, she had wandered out to the places that every village child knows without being told are forbidden, but that her father had not understood to teach her. There she had met the fairy queen, who took her away for 3 years that did not pass, and made her an apprentice in her court kitchen. No one knew what had really happened, perhaps not even her, but the scent of her pies and her schnitzels, her pastries and her stews, her braised rabbits and her spiced ducks were revealing to anyone who had deep roots in the shadow of the mountain. And they knew that to taste this food was to give your soul to the fairy queen, or something more terrible yet, though Her Majesty would not collect until it suited her. And so, while it would be folly to raise a restaurant favored by the Queen of the Fairies, they would not let their children eat there, nor anyone who visited and asked their advice, though they did not know many people from outside the village. And they pitied, with a marvelous awe, the handyman and his family, who ate the fineries of the fairy court, who knew the tastes of the impossible, who breathed in the spices of the otherworldly, and who unknowingly belonged, bodies and souls, to this land now, on a level that they and 1,000 years of their ancestors had carefully kept at arm's length. for they believed that some kinds of worldliness come with a cost, and that someday a master you do not even know will come to collect. And they warned the chauffeurs who came bearing visitors from far away, "Anyone who eats here is forfeit." But the chauffeurs shrugged, thinking that no one who still lived in their ancestral homes could possibly understand what freedom and bondage really are, except for a chauffeur who was himself a refugee from Syria and another from Cambodia, who both listened and nodded and then never returned. This has been a dispatch from the Institute of Magical Historicity. The Institute is headquartered in San Francisco with major offices in New York, Zurich, Rochester, and Prague. Dispatches are released twice a month on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other services, with additional dispatches provided exclusively to Institute members. Dispatches cannot be taken for credit, but can serve as course prerequisites. We'd like to thank our supporters, including Jim Foster, Theodore Wax, and Michael Berger. The Institute is a signatory to the Johannesburg Protocols and is in no way affiliated with Benjamin Winter or his estate. For more information, including a selection of workshops, books, artifacts, and certifications in magical historicity, visit magicalhistoricity.com. You can support the Institute or become a member on Patreon at patreon.com/magicalhistoricity.